Hello and welcome to our podcast series, Conversations with Kids Peace. I'm Bob Martin. April is Autism Awareness Month, and so it's a good time for us to check in with our good friend, Rob Harvey, Director of Intensive Behavioral Health Services, that's IBHS, here at Kids Peace, to find out how our autism-focused programs are doing and look at some of the issues that he's looking at for the future. Here's our conversation. Rob Harvey, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Bob. Love to be here.
All right. Let's begin with a quick review for our listeners of Kids Peace's offering in terms of helping kids with autism. What are we striving to accomplish with those programs?
So, I love this question, and I could talk about it all day. I will spare you. So many people don't know that we have this great continuum of autism services for kids as young as a year old up to adulthood. So we offer intensive behavioral health services, which is kind of our first layer of care. That's my primary kind of job is as the director of those services. So we see kids as early as their diagnosis, and we provide services where they need it. So we're going to their homes, to their schools, to their daycares, so that we can provide that service right there where they need it to work on their kind of communication, their interaction skills, so that they can kind of have this more fulfilling, meaningful, happy life. And we're also working with their caregivers. So we have that layer of care. We have our group services. So Sarah Smile, our after-school program, we have that program, so that's more of a group setting. So the kids get the skills in a one-on-one basis, and then they can move to this group-based where they are learning those social skills in more real time. So that's kind of the second. Then we have our outpatient services, which are kind of huge. So you can have one-on-one therapy. So some of the kids are receiving that sort of help. And then we also have group therapy, which is similar to our after-school program, but they meet once a week for about an hour. So it's a lot less intensive, but they're working on kind of these skills in a fun, engaging format. So we have that as well. And then I would be remiss not to mention our newest service, which is kind of on the hopefully near horizon as we're beginning a autism-focused foster care through Kids Peace. And then we also have this great partnership with the Autism Society of the Lehigh Valley and kind of a newer relationship with the Berks Autism Society. And through those, we've been able to partner for lots of events and kind of an expanding of our social skills offerings. So that's where we have a lot of groups for adults from the community on the autism spectrum, doing all kinds of fun events for that as well. So it's a pretty cool continuum. And our back to your original kind of question, our purpose is to give that support, to not be handing these individuals who struggle with change, who struggle with getting, you know, making relationships with new people. Our purpose is to kind of have within Kids Peace this ability to move them through that continuum without that bump in the road, so that they can have a great life. The life that they want to have is really our focus.
And it's interesting you mentioned these bumps in the road and what they're facing, because I was wondering about specifically what kind of challenges are you seeing these folks facing in the post COVID-19 pandemic period?
Yeah. So a lot of the original bumps exist, you know, access to services, which, you know, we had hoped that the pandemic would create this realization that everyone needs help and we need more therapy. But the funding's still not there. And we struggle to hire the staff that we need to provide the care. So the first part of the realization that more people need help, that's loud and clear. But the second part of it, that we need to respond in kind and have more care available, is still kind of struggling. You do see a lot of increased ability to provide some sorts of remote kind of therapy, but the state, the federal government, they're all kind of, you know, iffy about that. So you've seen things like outpatient therapy get kind of regulated further so that we can't do that as easily as we'd hoped. So for the autism spectrum specifically, I think that, and this kind of goes even beyond autism, but there was a lot of this strengthening of history in that you could stay home. You didn't need to go out and socialize or be part of clubs or groups. So people that were kind of inclined to staying home and not getting out there, COVID kind of taught us that maybe that is more practical. And so now we face this kind of getting people back into care. And they had this learning history where they didn't have to be out there. They weren't out. Nobody was out there. So kind of correcting from that wave has been somewhat difficult in and amongst all the kind of regular stressors.
You know, it's funny because I was having a conversation with someone who described themselves as an introvert. Mm. And they said, everybody's talking about how great it is to be back to normal and we're all out again after COVID. And the introverted folks are like, I'm uncomfortable. And now I'm sort of like the outlier, yeah. So to speak.
Yep.
So we have to be careful of that. And as you mentioned, and we've talked about this on a lot of different levels with our programming, the pandemic has had an impact in terms of giving people more visibility as to the need. And that leads to greater demand, but the traditional underfunding of mental health in all areas, lead us to a point where we have a greater unmet need. And I know that's difficult for folks like yourself and others that are in the therapeutic. You didn't get into this business to say, oh, no room at the inn, you know, we can't get you in here. So I think that's really, it's really an important perspective to have. A few years ago, we spotlighted some of your efforts in using the role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons as a way of participants learning and practicing some of the social skills you talk. Is that still going on?
It's still going on. It's strong, never been better. You know, the key to engagement therapy of any type is motivation. And so there's never a point where we don't have a waiting list of people that want to be part of this service. It's just the fun is baked into it and the social skills just kind of come right along with the game. So through Kidspeace, we currently have two groups running, myself and another therapist who's doing a similar thing. But then with our partnership with the Autism Society, we're doing an additional couple of other groups for Dungeons & Dragons. And the participants just love it. And they come away with this great sense of belonging and connection, and their skills are building just kind of right along the way. So it's still to this day, it's you know, my crowning achievement is being a part of this really cool thing.
I should note a past issue of Healing Magazine. You wrote us an article that detailed some of this. We'll put a link on the website for that. That article, as well as your piece on our Kids Peace Stories,
yes,
video series. So I agree. I think it's a tremendously interesting take on things, as you and I have talked a number of times, take on things that people wouldn't necessarily say, oh, that has a therapeutic benefit. And it's like, it actually does. And we're seeing improvement with these folks in terms of their social skills and their ability to interact with others. I think it's fantastic. And I as always, I congratulate you on that innovation. Speaking of innovations and looking at things in a different way, you've been conducting some training sessions on a couple of fascinating topics, and I want to get into those. The first one I want to talk about is you are going to be featured in an upcoming Kidspeace Clinical Cafe session. Clinical cafes are a program we do at Kidspeace for therapeutic professionals, give them training in their field. And your session is going to focus on ethical issues surrounding nonverbal or limited verbal individuals. What are some of the key issues that you're focused on in that area?
So I really want to challenge people to think of what it means to work with humans who have limited verbal ability. I just consider going to your doctor and the doctor asks you, you know, how are things going? And you can't tell them. They ask you, you know, if you're having any side effects and you can't explain them. You can't say no. You don't have that ability to say that something hurts or how much something hurts. I mean, even, you know, I think of my own children who are neurotypical for the most part, explaining like a tummy ache, right? Like, are you going to throw up? Is it gas? They can't really explain it. And they have a full range of language. So if you're looking at a person who has limited verbal ability, it becomes really difficult to make sure that they're okay with what's going on and to find out what kind of future they want to work towards. So that's the hallmark of good services, is to include the participant in their planning. And if they can't kind of tell you, then you lose that important piece. So I really just want to challenge the participants to kind of think about what goes into that, you know, from the basics of, should you talk about a client in front of them, you know, to really kind of thinking about what sort of considerations of assent and then consent, you know, once they're of age, need to be kind of factored into what's going on. And then my co-presenter, Gina Johnson, who's also a board certified behavior analyst, she'll be talking more about the interventions you need to use to bring out some of that language. So it's kind of like a 1-2 punch kind of training that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And it's a great example of what we do with the clinical cafes, by the way. I think that's one of the best things we do here at Kids Peace. The other area that you've been developing trainings on is regarding the presentation of autism specifically in girls, in female clients. You note that there's been some interesting insights coming to light recently. What are some of those?
Yeah, I find that training was, to do the research to present that training was absolutely mind-blowing for me. And for a person who's been kind of in the autism field for 21 years at this point, not that I feel like there's, you know, not still things for me to learn, but totally kind of mind-blowing. So we kind of know, we're all familiar with the statistics of, you know, 1 in 36 is where we currently are. So that's a big kind of number to throw at anybody, right? But we also kind of know that it's 4 times more likely for a boy to be diagnosed with autism. So for the longest time, we assumed, well, this is a genetic component. There's something about boys that they're more likely to have autism. I'm still not completely convinced that that's not true. But the current research, the reports from individuals on the spectrum, from parents, is really that it's a lot about a diagnosis problem, that we're not noticing that girls have autism because they tend to have more sophisticated language, which is, you know, if you look at a male versus female, just kind of population, women are more sophisticated in their language, right?
Huh. Oh, sorry.
So that's not terribly shocking, right? But their behaviors tend to be, you know, what I would say, quieter. So they're less aggressive in general. You know, we're speaking in generalities here. They're less aggressive. They're less destructive. They're you know, they're not screaming or having these kind of loud behaviors in general. So we're finding that it's taking a lot longer to get that diagnosis. Some are not getting it at all. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're growing into adulthood and sometimes self-diagnosing, sometimes getting diagnoses then, sometimes just saying, I would have had a diagnosis if I had gone, right. you know, if I had a good person doing it. And the you know, I'll kind of, the last thing I'll say about this is the thing that fascinated me the most. So you look at 1 in 36, you look at four times more likely for boys to be diagnosed. But then if you look at the statistics about what's kind of emerging as being called profound autism, autistic individuals who will require kind of high level care for their entire life, almost certainly. So really low communication, really high level behaviors, those sorts of things. When you look at that population, you're looking at a 1-to-1 kind of correlation. So you lose that 4-to-1, which again tells me scientifically that there has to really be something to this just, difference in diagnosis between boys and girls. That it's not necessarily that it's four times more likely for boys to have it. It might really just be that it's four times more likely for us to identify it in boys as girls. Okay. So
it's all depends on the keyhole that you're up looking through. I mean, you might say, oh, that's what it looks like there, but we have to look at it in a much broader sense. And I think it's interesting because it sounds like very much in the same realm as we've had with other health issues in our society, where I think about heart disease, for example, where women have been traditionally thought of as not as susceptible, and it turns out to be that's totally wrong. And obviously, that's a tragedy in the making, right, so to speak. On that point, now, when we talk about diagnosis, is those diagnosis being done basically by, say, pediatricians or
a lot of the time? Yeah. That's that is one of the biggest barriers, is that really we'd love to get all of these kids in front of a developmental pediatrician. But in this area, you're really looking at a very small number of practitioners. A lot of people are going to CHOP or other places.
And Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania.
Correct. Thank you. And looking at year to 2 to 3 year waiting lists, which is, I mean, can you imagine having to wait that long to get diagnosed with anything, let alone something that if you don't get in on that first day, you're losing time. So there's amazing people like Mary Barbera. You can find her on Instagram or Facebook. Her mission is really to inform parents what they can do in the meantime until they get that diagnosis. But a lot of times, yeah, it's coming through. It's coming through just, general practitioners. It's coming through school evaluations, which, I mean, by that just means they're waiting until they're five, right?
Right.
And how many milestones have you missed by five?
Right.
So huge, huge barrier.
Yeah. I should mention, I think I said Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania. It's Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I do not want CHOP coming after me. So. Rob, you mentioned you have been working in this area with these kids for over 20 years. If there were one or two things you really wanted people to understand about the neurodiverse population, what would that be?
Oh, boy, oh boy. That's a good question. So I think the first thing I would say is to embrace it, to seek these people out and make connections with them. I love my job. I love the people that I work with. They inspire me on a daily basis. I have Dungeons and Dragons group tonight, and I'm looking forward to it. Not, because I'm going to make money or even because I'm helping people, I am looking forward to that. But it is just enjoyable to do the work that I do. And so it's not like this different subset of people, they're just, fantastic. So I think I mentioned this in another podcast, but your parents will say like, oh, don't look at that person. They have special needs, or, oh, don't bring that up. That's the opposite of what we need to do, is we need to connect to these people, and talk about, this is Autism Awareness or Autism Acceptance Month, whichever, you prefer. That's what we should be doing, is talking about it. So I think that's the first thing I'd say. And then the second thing is just that, we've known this for years, that this huge population of autistic children is going to become adults. That's happening, Bob.
Right.
We're there. And even though we knew it was coming, we did not prepare, it's like a Game of Thrones, like winter is coming, like everybody knows, but nobody bought a coat, So like here we are, having all of these wonderful individuals, that are coming out of their school kind of age and losing access to any type of services. Right. And the rates of depression, of anxiety, of suicidality among the autistic population are so heavily overrepresented compared to the neurotypical population. And that, to me is a national crisis that we should have recognized, and we need to do more about.
I see. That is such a fantastic statement of the issue. And so I really feel bad about bringing this sort of lighthearted thing to the end here. But as you know, each of our podcasts, we end with asking our guests for a life hack, favorite saying, inspirational story, tip on how to cook, you know, vegetables better, whatever you want to talk. As I said, I'm kind of embarrassed, but I'm going to go ahead anyway and say, what's your life hack for us today?
This is the question I struggled the most with, Bob, was coming up with
which. We hear that all the time.
Which life hack I wanted to impart. So I'm going to go with my mentor, Julie Tribat. She's the BCBA that kind of brought me through everything. We refer to her as our fairy godmother of applied behavior analysis here at Kids Peace. But she always says, look for the helpers. And what I mean by that is in times of trouble, in times where you think everything is going wrong, there's no one, you know, people suck, all these things you hear, she says, look for the helpers. And it takes a very short time to look around and realize how many people are out there just selflessly, just helping. And I've always just loved that saying, and it's gotten me through some rough times, at work, personally, you know, kind of existentially. So that's what I would say. That's my life hack is, you know, when in doubt, when upset, look for the helpers.
Excellent. Rob Harvey is Director of Intensive Behavioral Health Services here at Kids Peace. And Rob, it is always a delight to have you. You can come back anytime. Thanks for being with us today and joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. And thank you for joining us as well. We look forward to having you join us again for more conversations with Kids Peace. Until then, take care.